Hello and welcome to the Trauma Super Conference. My name is Jai Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very pleased to be welcoming James Reeves. Welcome, James.
Hi, Jai. It's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
So James is the author of The Book of Rest and the founder of Deep Rest, an online coaching, mentoring and support platform. So considering this is the trauma conference and you are all about rest and deep rest, do you want to tell us a bit about how they're connected?
Sure. Yeah. Well, my journey into teaching the practice of deep rest, which some of you may know as yoga nidra, it's also being referred to as non-sleep deep rest through the science community now. These practices, my influence and the person that taught me many moons ago was a part yogic scholar, we could say, and part psychologist. So the way that I love to explore these practices and what I've found to be profoundly healing and transformative for thousands of people that have come through the different programs that I've offered over the years is really looking at how the rest state, how learning essentially to calm down, settle down, get steady, reset our nervous system into that kind of equipoise or homeostasis, rather than from being kind of triggered and alert, which is a really someone that has trauma going on that, you know, maybe either triggered into trauma or has a sort of consistent low level of vigilance and hyper arousal in their body. How by being able to rest, it provides a forum for them being able to meet what's difficult, to meet the disturbance. And what's typical in yoga world, and you know, to be playful, Jai, why not? We just want to feel better. So it's like, oh, I just want to lay down and, you know, I want to feel relaxed. I've been a bit stressed, or, you know, I've been a bit moody or reactive the last day or the last few hours. I'm just going to lay down and rest. And we take a rest and we feel better. But in many ways, I think if we're talking about the relationship between rest and trauma, how when we feel better is actually a window of opportunity for us to go, well, now I feel okay. Maybe I could meet what's difficult. And then there's a whole load of ways that we can talk about, and we could say a whole kind of protocol for how we then do that. So we can harness that rest state of feeling okay, safe within ourselves, self-regulated, to be able to start to incrementally, slowly, with great care, respect, and love, meet the trauma, meet what's difficult. So to me, rest is one of the most amazingly powerful tools for working with trauma.
I love that. I really love that idea that when you rest, you allow the sort of spaciousness, the resources, and the capacity to then meet the difficulties of the trauma. And I'm curious, because you say, you know, you take a rest and then you feel better, which is a lovely sentence. But in this day and age, it can be really hard to just take a rest. Like, I know for myself, often if I'm amped up, taking a rest means monging out in front of Netflix and then I don't necessarily feel better, right? Or taking a rest means scrolling on my phone and getting in an Insta loop and then I don't necessarily feel better. Or taking a rest is going for a walk because I think it will rest my mind, but then I have physical ailments and before I know I come back and I'm exhausted from the walk and then I have loads of things to do. So how do we take rest? What is it to actually take a rest? Because often if for people who are traumatized, just stopping and being still can be really activating, because it actually, whilst it does create space to be with the trauma, it also sort of creates space for all the traumas and all the triggers to come up to the surface, and that can be really intense and difficult for people.
Yeah, sure. I the reason that I said yay was your honesty about the Netflix thing. You and two-thirds of the Western world, you know, plugging into any sort of form of escapism that gets us close to rest. And in the Book of Rest that I wrote in 2019, that point is articulated a lot, that, you know, getting close to rest town isn't actually rest in and of itself. So we can talk a little bit about how we do that. But the other point you make, I want to proceed talking about how we rest, which is the resistance to it, because I was talking with another restorative yoga teacher, someone called Lizzie Lassiter, which some of your listeners may know of, the daughter of Judith Lassiter. She was sharing with me some of what she considers to be the sort of the blockages to people stopping for restorative yoga practice. And we, hashed out some of these ideas together, and I came up with the name roadblocks to rest. So for most of us, we're going to fall into one of these kind of four categories, which is I don't have any time. And actually, the truth of that statement is I'm not prioritizing rest, because we all have the same amount of time in a day. And I'm sure if you are doing some of that scrolling, and come on, everyone, let's admit it. Most of you are to a lesser or greater degree. And if you're not, well done, that's great. I'm glad you got a handle on that. But there will be other parts of your day that may be not as important as you taking a break for yourself. So when we don't prioritize rest, maybe we don't understand its efficacy and its importance. So when we take a rest break in the middle of the day, we're going to have heightened and elevated mood. We're going to have decreased reactivity, and that's, particularly in relationship to trauma. We're going to have a greater capacity for focus, greater self-regulation, and we're essentially going to be a more productive, kinder, pleasant individual to spend time around. We're going to be a much better caregiver for our kids, etc. So actually saying I don't have time for rest is saying I'm not prioritizing this. And when we understand what it is, we get another piece, which is guilt. Sometimes people feel like, oh, like taking rest is self-indulgent. I shouldn't be doing this. The other people in my life are more important. And it's just that classic thing of, I'm going to put my oxygen mask on last. And actually, only when I realize that I can't breathe and I'm in panic, am I remembering to put this oxygen mask on. But if we realize from that list of benefits that I got, and they're not exhaustive, there's more if I had my crib sheet with me, that taking a break can be such a great improvement in our resources and our capacity as a human being. We can switch from guilt, which is a sort of collapsed, what I would call a quote unquote negative emotion, and we can flip to its opposite, which is something that's used in yoga nidra a lot, which is potency and responsibility. I go from guilt and shame, and I'm not worth this, into I realize when I take responsibility for myself and see how powerful and potent this practice is, I'm serving everybody else. And then the other two things are, one, let's just be playful about it briefly, FOMO, fear of missing out. What, doing nothing? But everyone else looks like they're having an amazing time. I just checked in on Instagram and I got to keep up, which I flip into the joy of missing out. I love saying no. I love a quiet night in, but not everyone's on that page. So again, that plays back into those priorities and how important this might be for you. But the last and the biggest one is actually, it's really scary to meet yourself. And when I say that, and there's a from you, I think we can all recognize either we've been on that journey ourselves, and we can say that with a degree of compassion and empathy, or we can hear it and kind of have a mix of responses, which might be no, that's not me, or yeah, actually it is really scary to meet my trauma. What do you mean, turn around and face what I've been running from all of my life? What do you mean, feel my anxiety? What do you mean, stay in that sort of hypervigilant state and notice it and befriend it and get to know it and, climb down from it? No, thank you. I just want to rest and feel nice. So I think all of that resistance happens for so many of us. And then add in the addictive capacity of scrolling and how easy it is to watch Netflix and have a glass of wine, then it's fairly straightforward. Most of us know what rest would really look like. We were doing it before the digital revolution. You drove past a bus stop 25 years ago, and people would just be staring out into space. Someone might be reading the newspaper. Now, there's 10 people there at the bus stop, all like this. No one's taking space. No one's having those breaks because of the addictiveness of tech. And Also because life has got so fast-paced and frenetic, we've lost our capacity to stop. So I know there's a kind of lot of shares in there, but then how do we rest? Well, we're talking about constructive rest, which is where we might follow a protocol such as deep rest or yoga nidra, and we take a tour through body sensations, we tether our attention to the breath, subtle sensation, we meet emotion, and we explore opposites. And this kind of protocol, this guided rest system, with myself and a gazillion other people out there that are offering this kind of stuff, helps us go from that near rest state, like I've got my feet up and I'm somewhat recovered, into a deep rest state, which allows us then to really heal out of our trauma. So I think we need some structure. These days, I don't tend to practice those formal steps and stages of deep rest. I've done it so much, excuse me, I've done it so much that I know how to enter into that state, and I know the protocol inside out, so I can take my own personal tour of the body without having to listen to guidance. But initially, we need to, maybe listen to something audio-wise so that we learn how to enter into that rest state.
I love that. I love how you've described all the roadblocks to rest before talking about how to rest. And again, I think it's so important how you talk about needing a protocol at first. And like with any practice, once you've practiced it enough and it's integrated enough, then you no longer need to follow the protocol. Then you can take time where you know how to get into that state of deep rest without needing guidance or listening to it. It's the same with many other practices that get talked about on this conference and others. But initially, because we've all been programmed to just have very whirring brains and to be doing, and the even though we're named human beings, most of us are human doings, it can be really difficult to get into that. So I really value that there are people like you and many others who offer the guidance and the protocols to go into the state of deep rest. Now, I'm curious because you spoke about near rest and then you spoke about deep rest, but you also talked about how deep rest isn't sleep. Could you say more about the differentiation between the two?
Well, I mean, one lends itself to the other. If we've learned to sleep well, then we're probably going to be able to rest better. And if we're resting really well, it will likely lend itself to our sleep, depending on what time of the day you do choose to rest. And then for some people, when they practice yoga nidra or deep rest, they just fall asleep because they're knackered. And they're, out of the tradition, depending on the teachers and teachings you go to, some practices of yoga nidra will even have a message like, do not sleep. Sleep is dirty, don't do that. My take on it is a bit more human, which is when we need to sleep, we sleep. And getting close to that rest state, can then take us over the edge. And sleep is really important for us. And taking a 10-minute nap in the middle of the day or catching up on your sleep, as long as it's not too close to bedtime, can be really constructive and really help us be refreshed in the ways I mentioned earlier. But yoga nidra itself, the idea of it is that we're entering into a betwixt state. We're somewhere between sleep and awake. And the way I like to talk about this, if we think of the story of Alice in Wonderland, that's really a description of the hypnagogic state. We can have these what are called hypnagogic elucidations. We may get waking dreams, rabbits with pocket watches, and girls that get big and small and swim in a river of their own tears. It's weird stuff. It's the stuff of dreams. But when we start to go very close to the edge of sleep and into this hypnagogic state, we can have these momentary kind of waking dreams. That's a byproduct of being in that state. But our brain changes from being predominantly producing beta waves, kind of cognition, figuring things out, to-do lists, into that more watching sunset kind of state of the brain. And it just happens very naturally. So what we're really trying to do is learn to surf on the edge of that state for longer and longer periods of time. We're very sleep deprived, we'll be there for 2 minutes and we're gone, we're asleep. Sorry if that worried you that I'd just sort of gone into a narcoleptic moment of actually falling asleep. I'm still here. I'm okay. So, we may get really close to it. We may find ourselves drifting in and out. I've heard some of the instructions. I'm trying to bring my attention through my body, but I'm not quite following. I keep drifting in and out. That's a good yoga nidra state. You're not doing anything wrong by that. But ideally, we're staying close to this in-between state, which becomes very transformative. Our brain is producing now predominance of these alpha waves, so a kind of slowing down of our thinking analytical mind, and we're close to the dream state, as I suggested earlier. Now, our unconscious, which tends to be the place that we put all of our trauma, is then readily and easily accessible, which can be wonderful and problematic depending on your orientation and where you are in your journey. So if we can, firstly, I consider there to be kind of three phases of this of surfing that in-between state. The first phase is well-being. I started talking about this right back at the beginning, where we are sensing into our body, being with the sensations of our breath and subtle sensations in the body. There's a way to get more and more out of our heads and embodied, to be able to get very used to, over maybe hundreds of times, becoming sensitive to sensation. We can really now feel our hands. We can feel inside the mouth. We can feel the chest, the belly, the pelvis. And these sensations in our body are the home ground of those emotional repressions that will be in our unconscious. When they reveal themselves, they're going to be part sensation. So we're wiring ourselves up to then be able to get very close to our feelings and our emotions, but we're not quite doing that yet. We're feeling this sense of well-being and ease and okayness, learning it over time, so that we go from, to be playful, from ooh to ah, we can get into this relaxed state. When we know that we can proficiently do that, like kind of the first stage of riding a bike, you wouldn't do tricks before you can, just ride up and down without falling off. Then the next phase is, how do I meet emotion? Which can work one of two ways. We may be lying there having a lovely time, and suddenly we get this wave of sadness come up, or anxiety, or anger, or whatever it may be. And that happens. That can happen in yoga nidra. So it's not always a pleasant ride. You may meet feelings and emotions. They may just surface as you get close to the unconscious. And I consider that to be, I'm borrowing this line from a teacher called Lauren Roche, who talks about how emotions are a little like a cat that wants to kind of come in and sit on your lap when you settle on the sofa. When we're at rest, our emotions may come and find us. Or we can proactively engage with what we know has been circling around. We all have trauma. We all had difficult moments in our childhood. We all had ways that our primary caregivers missed us in certain ways. Nobody had the perfect childhood. So, whether your trauma is complex, is compounded, whether you know all of its components and understand it well, whether it's a mystery to you, you realize that you've been freaking out and you don't really know what it's all about. We can start to proactively engage by saying, okay, I feel calm and steady now. What's here? What wants to be met? What could come in and come and rest on my lap? And then there's a whole protocol for how we do that, how we regulate ourselves and how we stay self-regulated, how we may need to do this with another person, because I noticed often with trauma, we need to co-regulate. We need to actually do that with someone that we trust. So that could be just the sound of someone's voice guiding us, or it could actually be doing something live. So that's what I tend to do with people who have trauma. I'll actually work with them individually and we'll meet it together. In a form or a technique that I call co-meditation. So there are lots of different ways that we can come to meet this emotional self as part of the rest experience and begin to integrate those levels of trauma The first stage is that restfulness, and we need to be there. And then we may meet ourselves emotionally, and then the kind of deeper question we might get into is, what's behind that? What's consciousness? What's observing this? What has always remained okay, even when my mind and body are freaking out? That, you know, that's a juicy question. Maybe that's a different conference. I'm not sure.
That's fantastic. And I think what I really love in everything what you're saying is that it really feels like there's the element of surrender. And I was talking to Ziba Khan also about who's an Ayurvedic practitioner and works in different ways within a holistic approach to healing about surrender. And it's like what you're saying about, you know, when you're talking about the differentiation between deep rest and sleep, it's not about resisting sleep. It's not about saying no. It's just about reaching that deep state of relaxation and surrender where you're sort of surfing. And you're coming in and out of sleep or consciousness or not sleep. And I know that state both from, you know, doing restorative yoga or yoga nidra, when sometimes I do, like there's been many times where I've been healing from severe chronic illnesses where I just sleep for an hour and a half. But how wonderful to have that opportunity when clearly, as you say, it's needed. My body, that's what it needed for its healing process, was just to sleep. And so again, in the same way that, you know, when we were talking about the near rest and deep rest and all the blockages to getting into a state of deep rest, not waking up and feeling super guilty that we've slept because that was clearly what our body needed. And we can do it again the next day. And maybe the next day we won't sleep as much and we'll get more into that state of deep rest. But it's that kind of coming in and out and that relaxing into the state rather than resisting it. And again, with the emotions, what you were saying, right? It was similar, that sense of just allowing things to flow and not having an idea of this is, you know, the sentence you used at the beginning, like you have a rest and then you feel better kind of thing. It's not that you have to feel good. Part of feeling better is allowing the uncomfortable feelings to emerge and welcoming them and letting them sort of surf through you and be felt and be processed in that same way. And I know from my own experience how often when I'm in that either actual dream state or semi-conscious dream state, how I do end up just processing a lot of stuff and your worries and anxieties that were on my mind will come out and play out in that. But then there is a part of me that when I kind of come back into consciousness, I might feel slightly odd at first, a bit like when you come out of a therapist and you've been talking about all your traumas. But then there's been a release, right? And there's been a healing and a meeting of that. And I really appreciate as well what you were saying about not, you know, having the guidance and the support, whether that's through listening and through to a protocol or whether it's live. So it's not about trying to awaken the rushing emotions and the difficult trauma and just drowning in the difficulty, right? That there's actual safety and support and guidance in place. And that's super important because so many times people offer things that actually end up, you know, waking up the trauma or triggering or activating the trauma, but not necessarily supporting the trauma healing, and then people can get re-traumatized. So it's really important that extra element that you were adding about that.
Can we just maybe circle back around and talk a little bit more about that? I mean, in the trauma world, there's the turn of phrase tritation, which for those listening, if you don't know it, means to essentially drip feed or just, you know, slowly release. So we can tritate water into a rodent's cage for them to, you know, slowly drink rather than guzzle themselves. But we can tritate or slowly release the experience of what's difficult for us. Another way to talk about this is neuroscientifically looking at two qualities. Firstly, habituation, which is where we, you know, you walk into a room, incense is burning, you notice its smell. Science says maximum of 7 minutes, but probably within seconds, you normalize that smell and it becomes background information to your brain. And then new sensory information is coming in. So that's habituation. And then desensitization is like you run a really hot bath. And it's maybe a little bit too hot to get in all at once. So you put your toes in and then you take them out. And then 10 seconds later, you dip your toes in for a little bit longer and then you take them out. And then you get your foot in and then it comes out. And then you know, and then slowly you get into the bath through this process of going in and out. That is really how we want to work with the depths of trauma. And that's why sometimes working with another person to help us co-regulate to them, because for me, I'm not really scared of anything inside myself anymore. I've done a lot of this work. I've gone really deep into being with a lot of my traumas, pains, discomforts, my stuff, my complexes. I have a deep fascination in Jung and that element of psychotherapy. I've really been in. And I've worked enough with people to not be scared when they start to get triggered or when they start to get scared of themselves. So we co-regulate where one person is okay, even when the other person starts to go, whoa, okay, this is scary. And our nervous systems actually pick up on that. So sometimes we really do need someone to be with us, or we might need to do this in a group setting. I run a group every Tuesday night, and I have a collection of people that come together from all around the world. We all practice yoga nidra together, and they've been doing that for a couple of years. So there's that sense of community that builds and fosters a sense of safety. So we need that regulation, either self-regulation or co-regulation. And we also need to understand the importance of, not going straight into the most catastrophic, traumatizing memory, and to slowly take our time. Saying that, I've had plenty of people that have gone in deep, and by being held well, they were able to meet it. And it can, be very powerful for individuals. So I don't think there's one set of rules that works for everybody. And just my final piece on this, and this may, fly against some of the other presenters in the conference. I don't know what the general view is out there, but my sense of it is there can be a lot of like, oh, trauma, like I don't want to go near that. That's too scary. But most of us have some trauma in us. And my take on it is if we can reframe from to to compassion, to curiosity, to holding, to interest, to seeing even these what seem like very broken parts of us, the traumatic memories, the difficult emotions, they just want to come home and be loved. And even if they're really big, sometimes my kids get really upset. My son fell off his bike the other day and he really hurt himself, And if I am freaking out, as well as he being in pain, it's not so great. But if we can hold that and touch even our greatest pains with love, tenderness, compassion, curiosity, knowing that they're just coming home to be healed. I can, as I'm expressing that, you can probably hear it in my voice. I get very emotional at this because it's the heart of the work. It's so beautiful to see people be able to meet what's difficult. Because the rest of it is just a sort of, it's like the equivalent of a chocolate biscuit and an extra half an hour in bed in the morning. It's lovely to get deep rest to restore our nervous system. But the real healing comes from really getting up close with what's difficult. And, if you can find the right teacher, you can find the right environment. If you can find a way that you feel safe with yourself and with another person and with a protocol, and then you've got something to really hold you, which is the teachings, the teacher, and yourself and your own experience. Those three, I think, together will, support you through meeting even the deepest, most difficult trauma in your life.
That's really beautiful. And I'm curious that the Tuesday group that you mentioned, is that an online group?
Yeah, it's an online thing that I've been running kind of through the end of the pandemic, and it's just kept going. And
Wonderful.
you can register via the Deep West, Deep Arrest website, if I could say it. It's bad,
Fantastic.
isn't it, when you can't pronounce your own website? And yeah, people can come along and join in that experience because it's just. Here's my take on it. There's so much free content out there. You could plug into YouTube. You could find loads of non-sleep deep rest things. That's what I did to begin with. I listened to a CD from my teacher for a long period of time, but I didn't really understand what was going on and start to feel deep transformation until I actually spent time with that person in person. And, to understand, for example, because we're talking about trauma, how there are elements of this, like doing what's in psychology called parts work. There will be maybe young parts of you that need to come forward. There's the traumatized part. There's your inner critic that's, kind of shouting from the sidelines, "Come on, you big softy, what's the matter with you?" You've got, some kind of inner power figure or kind of self-potency in there. And there are all these parts that we need to get to know. And how we dialogue with them, how, you were talking about surrender, what I would call welcoming. That's a whole schema of, can you meet it in your body? If you feel that sensation in your heart that you're weeping right now, if that were to walk through a door in your mind's eye, what's it saying to you? What does it want? What does it need? Why is it here? And maybe you see that young part of yourself, or you see, yourself frightened by the roadside, right back in that traumatic memory. And, we need to learn how to meet these parts really skillfully and hold them with great love and with kindness. We need to find out why they're here. What do they need to feel resolved? Sometimes our emotions are just there to be expressed. We may just need to weep. But other times we may have a guest or a messenger, one of these parts of ourselves, that ask the most left field or unusual things of us for some kind of healing. They want you to have a conversation with somebody that you've been mentally going, "No, I never want to speak to that person ever again." And then this inner character says, "You need to speak to them. You need to find some resolution with them." Or, love yourself, trust yourself. So many beautiful messages have come from people's unconscious, from them getting in touch with these inner characters over the years, and getting into that and kind of breaking through is a journey of really, being able to trust. Like I said, those sort of three components of developing trust enough, and then understanding, how do I really meet this within myself? And as people can do that, just such transformation takes place. It's really beautiful to see. So, yeah, having some good guidance, I think, is kind of key along the way.
That's fantastic. And I'm always a big fan of like methods that bring together different wisdoms. And so I really hear that, when you're talking about deep rest, it's bringing in the sort of Eastern wisdom of yoga and yoga nidra, but you're also talking about sort of Western psychological tools and trauma healing tools from, whether it's internal parts and all these other things. And I really love as well how you're talking about, bringing together the mind and the body. So, we were talking earlier about how you're going from the ooh to ah, and that idea that when you're sort of in the sort of deep rest state, then your mind, you might be having these semi-awakened dreams that are processing, anxiety or depression or not depression necessarily, but like that are processing, traumas or things that are coming up for you and tensions that might be arising in your body might be being processed in your dreams, and then vice versa, right? It's like something you might think of something or some emotion might come up which might like create a contraction. But if you're in that state of deep relaxation, deep rest, then as you relax around that contraction, that also liberates things. So it's really that sort of harmony and balance between these different methods and these different this the mind and body, which is fantastic.
Yeah, there are so many different ways in to meeting this stuff, but
100%.
for those few people, maybe many people who are listening, who feel like, "That's great, but that's not me. I can't do that. That's too scary. That's too big for me." In my, really clinical experience over the last 2 decades, nothing's too big. Nothing's too scary. May take some time to really get there, and you may have to go super slow along that journey that we've been talking about, but you can meet it and you can resolve what seems insurmountable within yourself, for sure.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today, James. How can people find out more about you and your work?
Well, we mentioned it before. The Deep Rest website is probably the best place to get hold of me. It's something that I'm continuing to kind of grow and expand in terms of content up there. And you can come along and attend some of the live events that I teach there. If you happen to live in England or Europe, you can come and train with me. You can learn about facilitating yoga nidra. I run teacher trainings in both Europe and in the UK. And you can also work with me one to one. So that's the way that I most like to work with trauma. So there are all of those options, and you can find out about them through www.deeprest.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Jai. It's been absolutely lovely talking with you. Thank you.